Breslin, Carmel, California. It's tape number 414A, November the 9th, 1979, and it's side one of that tape. 1980 is going to be a very interesting year. I can tell it by all the news that is coming out every day, and we'll get right into it. I think we are now seeing the fruit drop off the trees from two very important plantings, and they're all coming ripe at the same time, and you'll just have to gather it up fast as the crop flourishes. At the end of World War I, when the Tsars were kicked out and the Russian Revolution took place, was a period where Great Britain and the United States and Germany, Italy, France decided to arm and go after that communist bear. They not only divided the wealth and threatened the multinationals and the ruling families, the royalties, but they threw the church out, and the church is always a good excuse to make war. Churches are wonderful justification, and when you throw the church out, you really almost stand alone like the existentials. You're responsible for yourself, and you can't go every week and confess about your wars. You have to live with them yourself. That was a very important year, and then in 1943 and 45, when the Germans realized that they couldn't take the Soviet Union, and we sent the Nazis scurrying all over the world with millions of dollars into the United States and Great Britain and France, Italy, the Middle East and Africa, South America, Central America, Asia. That is what is coming right now, and the news that you see today is affected by those events. We never had more terrifying weapons. We never had more people aware of what was going on. You need people to use the weapons. We sent billions of dollars of weapons to Iran, to the Shah of Iran, but this simple priest who wasn't even armed came in and took over the country, and the weapons didn't do him any good. I keep thinking, and I reread very often Ralph Waldo Emerson's essay on compensation. I ought to just read it one tape and send it out as an extra, but you should read it. And the pendulum is swinging every way. You had fascism, we had fascism, and the Middle Ages and feudal systems, but we never had so much television and dialogue and radio and cassettes going around the world and magazines and newspapers. Never so many people digging and delving and printing and publishing and speaking out, counteracting those forces. And remember, there aren't as many of them as there are of the masses. And once the masses catch on, like in Iran, it doesn't mean a thing to have 60 people killed. Why does it mean anything to them? The people on the streets are 26 years old. They were there when the United States threw out Mossadegh, wanted their oil, kept them in slavery, paid them off not to grow food, imported their food, had rising inflation. The middle class homes are $1 million, extreme poverty, terror, police, greed, and a man that left with $22 billion. So what does it matter to them if 60 die? It's a wonderful theater of the absurd, the whole drama, because we're left totally impotent in the United States. And it's an interesting situation to be. I've always been ashamed of being an American for the things we were doing in these other countries. And many of you know I do plan and hope to leave this country what I'm able to, you know, to get out of here, because there's going to be a lot of anti-American feeling, and I don't want to say later, well, I didn't approve of it then, but I didn't do anything. At least my record will speak up, will show through the tapes and the articles that I tried to alert to these various fascisms that the United States and the Nazis were putting together. Pravda had an article in the Associated Press this last week on California, and you know how I warned you about California and referred to Kenneth Lamont's book, California, the First Parafascist State. The way South Korea was overthrown in Seoul could very well happen in the United States when the masses, the Chicanos, the blacks, the Indians, the poor whites, the middle class, get out on the streets. The excuse for martial law will come from California. It will come from Stanford Research and their riot control. It will come from Ronald Reagan and the Pentagon, the collection of the Zebra killings, the Manson killings, the SLA. The mass violence is concentrated, the mind control, the zombies in California. And we have Charles Bates, Ebel Younger, Ed Davis, and now Raymond Precunier, who is in charge of the prison systems in California, the San Quentin Six case and the death of George Jackson, the Soledad brothers, the Angela Davis story, the Rochelle McGee, the shooting of the judge at Marin County. Pecuniary is one of the most dangerous men in American history. He and Evel Younger and Ed Davis, to me, are like Heinrich, Himmler, Goebbels, and Goering. And they'll stand behind when the president's in or the Führer is in. And he's now been made under-sheriff in San Francisco, which is frightening because out here we have the lineup of Bates and Pecuniary now and Younger and Davis. And so watch California. Don't take it lightly because with Pecuniary, he was appointed head of the prison system by Ronald Reagan and set up in separate sections the blacks against the whites and Chicanos, then would send the blacks out on the courtyard with the whites and have a confrontation, then shoot the three blacks, and then send the other guys off to Germany on a vacation. Pecuniary is a dog appointed by Reagan, and when Governor Brown came in, he moved him from the prison system over to the mental health, and then there were hospital murders and deaths in the medical system and the mental hospitals, and that's been hushed up. And now he's under sheriff in San Francisco, and that is a terribly important job for a man. He's understaffed. He's overexperienced for the job, which can only mean that we're going to get a lot more violence in the Bay Area. So watch it, because it may be the place from where this country would be overthrown if and when people caught on. Yeah, I'm starting to talk about the Pravda article. Pravda ridicules California from Moscow. They said California is a textbook example of the moral and social bankruptcy of the bourgeoisie state. After looking from California into the future, Americans have turned away from the site. It talks about the biggest bank in the world, the Bank of America, and the most bankruptcies, the highest standard of living, and then the most slavery among the agricultural workers and the Latin Americans and Chicanos. The cults, the religious cults, and the Klan, the Birch Society, the Nazi Party, Jonestown, and so forth. And he calls it a classic textbook for the study of capitalism in the last third of the 20th century, of their moral and social bankruptcy, the most suicides, the most scientific experimentations. California is all that. It also, not only is a classic textbook of the bankruptcy of the United States, but it is the place where the plans for the Garden Plot, the overthrow of America through the military, was planned by Ronald Reagan, and now that man is expecting to run for president of the United States. And if it isn't Reagan, the plans will be used by John Connally and Haig, or whoever runs for the Republican Party. It'll probably be either Connally or Reagan. There's an article this last week in the San Jose Mercury about a party in Washington celebrating the nomination November the 6th, 1964, when Lyndon Johnson and Hubert Humphrey won on a landslide victory, not the nomination, the election victory. And this article calls nostalgic 15th anniversary. LBJ HHH team recalls its night of triumph. Some of you young people may think that 15 years was a long time ago, but this is pretty funny. The widows of the two men, Lady Bird Johnson and Muriel Humphrey, had a party for 400 people, their husbands, workers, and somebody mentioned at the party, Pat Coleman, a former aide of Johnson and Humphrey, said, in saluting the past, many of the old Johnson-Humphrey crowd voiced doubts that the future could ever be as good as their years in power. My God, it is the end of an era, said Pat Coleman. Well, the future never did have a chance after Kennedy was killed and Lyndon Johnson became president. Then we began the escalation of the war in Southeast Asia, and if you want to be reminded of the fruits of that, just look at the pictures of the Cambodia crisis and look at Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam, and we go on and act like nothing happened, and that all came just after the escalation of the war, just after John Kennedy was killed. That was 15 years ago in November. They're celebrating their victory, not what they did to these people. I have a memo from Mel Eisenberg. He was a member of the staff of the Warren Commission, and he went to the January 20th meeting and wrote up a memorandum on February 17th, 1964, about Lyndon Johnson. And he said that he met with President Johnson, who called him in, and the president was concerned, this is a quote, about rumors of the most exaggerated kind that were circulating in this country and overseas. Some of these rumors went so far to attribute the assassination of John Kennedy to a faction within his government, Lyndon Johnson's, and they wished to see, suggested that Lyndon Johnson and people in the government wanted to see the presidency assumed by Lyndon Johnson. And they had to, Chief Justice Earl Warren had to squelch these rumors. The memo goes on to say, and therefore they should have their presidential campaign very early. The target date of the Warren report would be June the 1st because, in quotes, he hoped to see the report long before the presidential campaign, since once the campaign was started, it was possible that the rumors and speculation would come up again. So Lyndon Johnson was suspect of being a part of killing or covering up the killing of Kennedy, and the people that put Johnson in were suspect at that time. So you can imagine after the role that Johnson had as president with Humphrey as vice president, Barbara Garson had a play on Broadway called Macbeth on the plans of LBJ to kill Lyndon Johnson, a brilliant play. And it must have been a very jovial party that they had this last week celebrating 15 years ago the fun and games and not accounting the tragedy that these men brought all over the world and the discussion of that murder in Dallas that still isn't solved. News media coverage that continues over the South Korean, the murder of the president there, Park Chung-hee, is just amazing. And when you read the media coverage of any one assassination, you're just amazed at the way they cover up and cloud the real issues behind the murders. There was one article that came out this week in the Associated Press that reminded me very much of the LBJ memo. And it said the report said the KCIA chief had been plotting the assassination since June of 1979. It said he planned to declare martial law and lead a military revolution after killing Park and keep the assassination secret for 3 days and conceal his own involvement by implicating other officials and have his own agency investigate the slaying. Now, that is exactly what happened in Dallas, November 1963, after John Kennedy was killed. The CIA had been plotting the assassination. Lyndon Johnson was with Clifton Carter and his top aides in June when they decided officially to invite John Kennedy to come down to Dallas in November. They knew he'd be in Texas in November, and that's when they finalized their plans that he would be in the state at that time. They planned a military revolution. The Pentagon took over. The Pentagon wrote the Warren Report, sent the writers in. We haven't been able to get any real historians in on this. The Pentagon version is the official, and they did the autopsy and covered up the amount of bullets in the president and where the brains went. The Pentagon did take over after John Kennedy was killed. In Korea, they wanted to keep it secret for 3 days. They've kept this secret literally for 16 years. They wanted to implicate other officials. The second investigation of the Kennedy assassination has gone on now to maybe organized crime or maybe some persons, anti-Castro Cubans, but they couldn't find the smoking gun. They won't implicate themselves. And then in South Korea, they were to have their own agency investigate the slaying, and that's what happened in Dallas, Texas. The only thing that went wrong here was that the secretary, Kim Ki-won, was in the room and wasn't killed, and he chickened out and saw that the actual assassin was arrested. They kept him alive. If he had been killed along with all the others, they could have blamed a North Korean and brought in a body of a North Korean and said that for 3 days kept him on the spot and then hidden it for the excuse that they didn't want to cause a world war in North Korea and that they were going to keep it quiet, and they could have dragged in another plot if the secretary hadn't been in there in the room and wasn't injured and he squealed. If somebody had just squealed or would squeal in the future about the Kennedy assassination that worked with LBJ and that gang, the truth would come out a lot faster. Amazing headlines this week. The CIA now thinks Park was victim of a broad plot. Our Central Intelligence Agency thinks there might have been a broad plot. That kind of information probably costs us $1 million to figure out just on the assassination so far of the president of South Korea. Another one, inflation and growth. Two big South Korean burdens, like I mentioned on the tape last week on the killing of President Park Chung-hee. Inflation and growth are the problems. The reason countries are overthrown, why Bolivia had an election, it was overthrown, why El Salvador is having trouble, why Chile is under military dictatorship. In fact, I have a map of all the Latin American countries, all but two, under military dictatorship now. Inflation and growth is the problem. But the use of weapon systems and going bankrupt and arming just the military is one of the problems of inflation that is never brought up. and the growth of the population in awareness also, not only business growth, but as you get middle class and you have businesses and multinational corporations and wheeling and dealing in Korea, just as any other place, there's a certain element that get an education, want their children to go to the universities, get an education, they don't want to be in the Middle Ages. As soon as they get the universities, they begin protesting, and then the university people strike, and then the military dictatorship moves in. There's a growth in awareness, and there's a growth in the police system, and they balance each other and have a shootout, and that is called a military coup. Another article, Park's death laid to palace politics. Of course it was politics. Of course they had problems in the country. Of course there was a plot. These headlines don't really tell you the role that the Americans played in it and why they want him dead and how we will deal with the new murderers and be willing to bury him and just go on business as usual and continue the martial law and not necessarily have any more elections, because it was time to murder this man. And as I say, I think Marcos of the Philippines is another embarrassment. If the people rise up too much, they'll murder him and put in a new face. And by giving him a saving grace of time, like we gave Lyndon Johnson after Kennedy was killed, instead of investigating Lyndon Johnson and his meetings and plans to bring Kennedy there, the word goes out, we have to save the nation, we have to have peace, we can't act emotionally. Give the new leader a chance. That means let's arm to the hilt in case the people catch on again. One of the worst dogs of all is violence, who should be hung by the heels like Mussolini, and who gets $5 million for a book and is still wined and dined in Washington, is Henry Kissinger. An interesting article this week about Kissinger. Those of you who don't have Conspiracy Digest, I should give you the address of the article I did for them on Kissinger and his Nazism. I never believed for a moment Kissinger was a Jew. I believe he's a German Nazi that was brought over in his youth and trained at Harvard for the Rockefellers and the power structure to go back to Germany and then control our National Security Council as a German. And when he was in Harvard teaching, he was giving the information to the FBI about various teachers. He was an informer. And one professor of sociology, professor of history at Harvard, his name is Mr. Diamond, Sigmund Diamond, sent to the FBI for some freedom of information papers and got facts there that Henry Kissinger was sending comments of the students at Harvard, monitoring their opinions and so forth on world affairs, and turning them over to the FBI as a favor from Harvard University as a teacher. He had seminars and so forth. And then he'd give spying information to the FBI while he was at Harvard. He's a treacherous man, and I wish more people were getting documents to prove that treachery through the years and show how close good minds can be at Harvard University. If somebody comes up with some challenging new ideas that weren't consistent with the Kissinger Nazi approach, I'm sure that those young students maybe didn't get such good grades or didn't get the professions or the appointments they wanted, or there was a flyer and they were blackballed and they were kept down. And the ones who all had a single mind worked to the top. And that's why we have no dialogue on what's going on in the world, because those people that make it all think alike and work together. And professors like Kissinger had the right to inform on students who thought it was an open college where they could freely speak their minds. His New York Times article says that in Who's Who of America, where it describes Henry Kissinger, it said that he was part of the Operations Research Office and the Psychological Strategy Board, among other military groups in Washington, D.C., and that, of course, he didn't put into Who's Who of America that he was also informing for the FBI as a professor at the same time. As I said before, the fruit of arming for World War III, the seeds were begun at the end of World War I and World War II, and I have many, many articles gearing. It's inevitable to have World War III unless the counterforces get busy now and all over America and all over the world counteract those people that are anxious for it. Elliot Janeway had an article just recently on arms boom shaping to meet the world slump, and it goes into the fact that Jimmy Carter, as president, has sent more arms out than any other president, that in the 3 years of Carter's presidency, the United States has put more reliance on arms spending diplomacy than it did even under Henry Kissinger. And it tells about exporting arms all over the world and the dependence of armaments for employment, and the fact that Germany and Japan have won the peace by virtue of losing the war to the United States. that it's been good for them because they don't have to invest that money into weapons, but that we have put that money into weapons, and it's coming to a climax. This is an article by Elliot Janeway on the arms boom and how it's meeting the world slump. The article says, Germany is making noises and playing games about needing Dutch approval for their missiles, and I mentioned that on a tape a while back, and that Japan is anxious to get into the weapons industry and go back into the defense business as the arms variant of public works. It's called, in Japan, they call their arms business the public works, but they're getting ready now to go into the export business like Germany and make weapons and sell them all over the world. Another article last week in United Press, President Carter has increased military aid by 138% to the Philippines at a time where there's urgent social and economic problems. There are more desperately poor people in the Philippines than any time in history, and now the United States has sent $18 billion in military aid since 1976 and escalated it through Jimmy Carter 138% this last year, where the military in the Philippines hold tight control. We're escalating the weapons down there for Marcos to hold them down. Another article in the San Francisco Examiner this last week, Arms and the Soviets. More of us want more missiles. I've never been asked in a poll, I don't know if you have, if you want more missiles, increase the government spending on weapons. I don't know who they're interviewing or if this is one of those 400 CIA newspaper writers who is never identified by name. But we see articles that everyone in this country wants more missiles, so somebody who doesn't want it thinks there's something lacking. Another article, the Knight News Service this week, the Pentagon has drawn plans for a $2 billion rapid deployment force for possible intervention in the Middle East and other trouble spots. They're getting this $2 billion ready so they could deploy weapons if they need to. We've got the 82nd Airborne Division at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. We have the Marines. We have 1,000 planes for airlift, the C-5s, the C-131s. We can move a division anywhere in less than a week. And Senator Sam Nunn of Georgia from the Senate Arms Services Committee is asking for more weapons. Let's get more going and be ready for war. That is in the news, and weapon systems are very much in the news every day, the amount of money and the contracts going into killing. Just a few brief comments about the Shah of Iran, because most of you can get articles of up to date of what's going on. Yesterday's paper had an article, United Press, Trisha Nixon visits the Shah in the hospital. Now, some of you, again, are too young to appreciate the humor of this, but at the time of the civil rights riots in the South, there was this Maddox who had a restaurant, a chicken restaurant. He didn't want to serve blacks in his restaurant, and he was told to integrate. He didn't want to do that. He said he'd rather close his restaurant, and he had these little hatchets. I don't know whether to kill blacks or chickens, and he sold these little hatchets and gave up. He's on the show now doing road business, Mr. Maddox. But Trisha Nixon made a point, as the president's daughter, to contact him. I don't think Richard Nixon was president. No, he was his former vice president. He wasn't even president at that time during the civil rights movement. And she contacted him, Lester Maddox, to tell her how much she approved of his stance on the racism. Now, the American hostages have been held. It's 5 days over in Tehran. And so far, we haven't seen the Shah on television. He hasn't had a news conference. We don't know who's seen him. The president certainly could go see him, see what degree of cancer, or see if he's had face surgery, or what in the heck is going on. But the first person, real official, I call her an official, Trisha Nixon Cox and her husband Edward just paid a 30-minute visit. Edward Cox just went over to China with Richard Nixon on a trip over there, and just right after he got home from China, the president of China was in Germany praising Germany and saying that East and West should be united, and he calls on Western Germany to increase its defense. So Mr. Cox, evidently Trisha's husband, is very much in the political eye of the storm back there, and maybe is contacting him, goodness knows what for, as a espionage bag woman or whatever, because little Trisha is now visiting the Shah where nobody else goes in, and it would be interesting to know who else of public stature from the State Department has had a social visit with the Shah of Iran in the hospital. don't underestimate Richard Nixon. He's just amazing. He's going to move in a townhouse right next door to David Rockefeller, who is the host, invited the Shah to the United States. And it may seem just like a little thing in the news, but this Tricia Nixon visit has some significance to it. I can see something is cooking up here with her and as an envoy from Nixon and Richard Helms or the Shah. I can't believe that this is just a social visit, that before he would see people from the State Department when lives are on the line, that they would visit with Tricia Nixon and her husband. Associated Press had an article on the emotional stress and how it affects your physical well-being, and gives the example of the Shah of Iran, who has a breakdown in his social structure, and therefore he's more susceptible to cancer or disease because of what's happened to him. Well, any man who can live for 26 years the way he's lived, it's a wonder he just doesn't explode as a person. And in come these psychiatrists who come up with these ridiculous articles instead of saying this man is so cruddy that he's suffering, his own karma is coming back and poisoning. That's the way I'd rewrite the article. You don't have to go to medical school and be a psychiatrist to figure out what's happening to the dog or any other person like that who leads that lifestyle, and the interpretations for us are so ridiculous, instead of just coming out and saying this mass killer is suffering now and the chickens have come home to roost. I think that would be more appropriate, and that's a one-minute psychoanalysis of the Shah, and that's the way I interpret it, and you don't need all these sociological explanations of why he's caving in. The Associated Press had an article this Sunday, majority of Latin American nations now under military rule, and that means total starvation for the people, low income, diseased children, police states, terror, torture machines. Mexico they list as a civilian country, but the poverty is terrible, and I've heard some terrible stories from somebody, a radical social worker that came up from Mexico this week, that is on the brink of a total revolution because they're not using any of the oil for the benefits of the people, and they're starving. What did the Americans and the Nazis do prior to World War II and continuing afterwards? Costa Rica is civilian, but the countries they listed as military, Peru, military dictatorship, Bolivia, their elections after 15 years of dictatorship were overthrown this last week. Chile, put in by the United States after the election of Allende. Argentine, Nazi and fascist, Uruguay, Paraguay with President Alfredo Stroessner since 1954, Uruguay since 1973, Brazil, that was overthrown in 64 right after John Kennedy was killed, Suriname is civilian, Guyana is totally owned by the Central Intelligence Agency. They canceled their elections because Prime Minister Forbes Burnham was being challenged by the socialists and the laborers. Venezuela is run by the American oil companies, and people are kept down there. It's listed as civilian, but Brazil, Peru, Bolivia, Paraguay, Uruguay, Argentina, Chile, Mexico, the people have absolutely no rights, and each one of them has connections to the torture machine apparatus of the Nazis, funded by the United States and their weapon systems, and totally in control of the multinationals, draining them and keeping the people down. So when you see articles about the Bolivia, which is tragic, the way that dictatorship came in this last week, the shootings in San Salvador, piles of dead in shootout. And as I say, if you look at Cambodia and Laos and Vietnam, what's happening there, I'm not going to cover all the countries. This week there was an article on Brazil. The cops raided the church. There were metal workers on strike. They came in and arrested 100 strikers and broke into the Catholic Church. Great Britain has a military woman dictatorship now. They're starting to put young thugs into houses of treatment. They're like concentration camps, and they're counting down their social services. Mrs. Thatcher said this week, to counteract inflation, they'll have weapons and police and no social services, and Japan had elections but is in turmoil, a member of the trilateral. So these countries are listed right there, are in violent turmoil now. The newspapers are filled with deaths and police dictatorships. These are the fruits of the end of World War I and World War II. I don't have time to go into each country separately, but you can keep up and read these articles. And the other side of this tape, we're going into some news of the political assassinations and specific individuals.